you knew you could not fail? How high would you fly? How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart? To your beautiful heart.
This audio program is brought to you by Simply Celebrate. At Simply Celebrate, you can join a community of people helping one another wake up to all the joy, spontaneity, color, and connection that is available in our lives at every moment. To learn more, we invite you to explore our website, simplycelebrate.net, to discover how you can turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life. simplycelebrate.net. You're listening to Lively Conversations, an audio download series that we created to introduce you to extraordinary people doing extraordinary things. In this Lively Conversation, I'm exploring the topic of creativity with Lori Wagner, a noted Bay Area writer, teacher, artist, and coach. Lori teaches wild writing classes from her home in Alameda, California, and also on the internet at writers.com. She is the author of best-selling books like Living Happily Ever After, Couples Talk About Long-Term Love, and Expectations, Women Talk About Becoming a Mother. Both of these were published by Chronicle Books in San Francisco. Lori's love has always been people, interviewing them, pulling stories out of them, and helping them write their own tales. Through her love of writing and teaching, Lori has created a large community of writers who come from all over the Bay Area to gather, to write, to read their writing, and to meet each other around the fire pit of her garden home, which sits on a magical property at the end of the road. As you've probably guessed by now, Lori has a lot to share with us about the art of living a creative life. Like Simply Celebrate, she is focused on working with people who are committed to living lives rich with creativity and passion, and what opens up for us when we do just that. I hope you enjoy listening to this lively conversation with Lori Wagner.
So, hi, Lori.
Hey, Trisha.
How are ya?
Good.
Thank you. So, tell us kind of how you got into living your life through all this kind of way.
Gosh, let's see. It's funny about the past because it's wonderful, and everything that certainly that I've done has really taught me where to go next. So I can talk about the past, and I think that's great. And I will. I'll just start with the past, and I'll just say that I was just one of those kids who played guitar and wrote, and my parents gave me permission to draw on my walls, and so for all of my, growing up as a teenager in Los Angeles, it was just friends coming over and drawing on my wall, and that's how we spent our time. I listened to a lot of music, always played music, so I was always really feasting on, as much as I get my hands on, and I think it was a way to survive, a way to feed myself, a part of myself that I wasn't sure what I was. I didn't know what kind of an artist I was. I just knew that I was hungry for music and color and to do things with my hands. I went to college, and I was always a writer. And when I got out of college, I worked in a bookstore. And I think that was just me knowing that I wanted to be around books and me knowing that I wanted to be around writing, something about that.
Mm-hmm.
I became a journalist, and I worked in a bookstore and was also a journalist on the side. That was my early 20s. I got lucky because I got pulled into a documentary film called For Better or For Worse when I was in my early 20s, and it was a film about five couples who had been together for 50 years or longer, and that set me off. I was very interested in storytelling, and I went from journalism, where we were writing stories about what was going on in Berkeley and the city, to writing stories about people. I noticed that was really motivating for me. So each decision was really a way in which I just continued to hone what was really interesting to me.
Yes.
I didn't spend a lot of time in my career, and I never have, doing things that people in this career do. I always personalized it. I always made it important to me.
Yeah.
So I got involved with a documentary film, and I worked on some documentary films with David Collier. This particular film was really great, and it went on to get nominated for an Academy Award in 1994, which was really just a huge stroke of luck because that's so high profile, and I have had a part in that film, and I got to ask a lot of questions, and really a lot about asking questions, and
yeah.
From there, the publishers, Chronicle Books, came to us, and they said, we want to turn it into a book. And that was just the next step for me. It was my relationship with Chronicle Books and my relationship with being somebody who started to write books based on things I was interested in. So the first book was about 30 couples who had been married for 30 years or longer. The second book was called Expectations, and it was interviews with 30 mothers talking about the lessons they learned about themselves and motherhood.
Oh, wow.
In both of these books, you know, when I did the marriage book, I had been married a year, so... For me, you know, again, you're going to see this in my conversation with you. All the work that I do is mirrored by a personal quest of some sort. So the marriage book was finding myself in a community of who the marrieds were. And then also the motherhood book, I had a small baby, and it was finding myself in the community of mothers. And I think I'll jump ahead because I know you want me to get to the rest of the career stuff, and I will.
You know, before you do, what I just want to... check in with you on is I'm getting this idea around how you do what you do,
yeah.
Which is got the topic that we're talking about, which is having an element of that sort of creative force running through you at all times, and it isn't as much the form that it takes, and you could have stuck with just one form and just said, all you're going to do is, you know, write and then kind of go off into the various area, you know, that you would do. But in terms of, like you were saying, your confidence and willingness to shift your kind of creative self into a whole different medium and a whole different place, in and of itself is a very creative way to live your life.
Right. That's really true. And I think especially when you become a domestic, you know, when you start to be a householder and you've got a family and you've got little kids, I couldn't throw myself into those big books the way I could before I had kids or when they were very, very small and slept a lot. So I also had to move from being somebody who dug into books and dug into the depth of a subject matter into someone who could now just bite off smaller chunks. And that dictated my movement as well, you know, so being flexible. And where that moves me, I'm sorry, you're about to say something.
Well, you know what, again, what strikes me about what you're talking about is because you're an artist sort of from this internal core, you know, getting married, having kids, doing that, you didn't begin to shut off the creative pieces of yourself in order. You found ways for them to manifest differently because suddenly you had a different kind of schedule and you have a different kind of time. And so there's still a way that, you know, I know you live in this sort of kind of creative environment, you know, only because you didn't set that aside on a shelf, I think. And I think, I guess I feel a lot of people do that when they try to integrate the new pieces of their life. They feel like they, you know, you give up something versus find a way to adapt it and still feed you.
Right. Well, I think it's not so much about the things. You know, I think that's where... that's where we sort of get misaligned, because what I want to say is I love what you said. It's very much about the question is, how do we keep, whether it's about our creativity or even our relationships, you know, how do we keep the essence of the connection and let the form change? Because forms change.
Oh, wow.
You know, everything changes. If you think about your life, we really, our careers change, our friends change, our bodies change, the things we, you know, we grow out, we live one place, but we move on. You know, everything changes, and so there's nothing that nature wants us to change, and yet we want to be connected to something that pulls us forward, and so what is that? And so even in the conversation, like what are the different ways to bring creativity in, like I would never start with a list because that's so outside of ourselves. But, you know, what can we do to open to our own channel? So we're present to what we want. You know?
And we're really talking about, you just said something that really was an aha for me when you said it's not something like coming up with a to-do list or a list of,
no.
of ways to be creative, you know. Sit one down one day and go to magazines and make a collage, you know. Or I mean, it's that, and yet,
right.
What inspires you even to act on that impulse, if you had it, which I fear what happens to people mostly is they have these fleeting impulses of doing something like that, and then it gets stuffed down or redirected because their focus of attention is so elsewhere. So, again, what's striking me about this whole topic is there's the active part of being creative, and there is a doing part of how you do something, but then there's the sort of the art of living with that spirit.
Right. How do you get connected to the spirit? How do you get connected to the spirit? And so I can only answer that for myself, right? Maybe by the end of this conversation we'll have figured out a way to, you know, hopefully we will actually land a few ways that people might start to explore that if they want more of that in their life.
Right.
I can share, you know, some of the ways for me.
You do that, then let's. So, in terms of your background and all of that, I don't want to, you know, completely take us off track because I think you're probably going to reference it in throughout the conversation in terms of maybe the time in your life you were doing this or that and have a story about it. So, but I guess I would, you know, in a way like to move into the part of the conversation about this concept of, I'm going to be a little just kind of blunt here, but, you know, well, why should... why is creativity important? I mean, in terms of, like, even asking the question is wrong in the way that I'm asking it.
No, I like your question. I get it.
Okay.
Why does it matter?
Yeah.
Why can't we just wake up and get our coffee and take the carpool and then, you know, go to the job and sit at the job and nod our heads and say yes and get our debt, you know, because life is so full of mundane. And it's also, and the beauty in the mundane, but I really think that, why is creativity important? I think let's even substitute the word creativity for the word flow. Why is flow important? Why is it important to not just be a doer and somebody who marches along and getting older and going to the job and, you know, the same thing all the time? I think creativity takes you into all those gray spaces in between. It helps you live a life where you're walking and you feel the breeze on your face and you stop for a minute and you are in another place for a moment, and it creates a gap between, you know, what was in your head before and what's going to be in your head in a moment. It's like the uncture, the juice, the fluid that runs between our bones that keeps us moving.
And you know what's interesting about how you're describing that, and you said it's, you know, we can become such doers versus creators. And and I think if you really sat someone down who was unhappy in their life, it's because they're not creating the kind of life that they want to be living. And chances are they're just doing what they think they should be doing in order to live this life. And suddenly you have this idea that's the deepest part of this conversation, right, about creativity, which is just the force in and of itself is life, and it wants to live in a creative, you know, kind of way, in a flow way. And I think what we do is cap it.
We cap it, and it's funny, as I was getting ready for your call, you know, I thought, well, how can I fall into my own flow here? And so I've been making some altered books. And so I just opened up a couple of them that I made a few weeks ago at a weekend workshop and just opened them so I could see them so that I could connect with what it is to drop into a creative space. And what I see as I'm looking at these really beautiful pages full of color and sparkle and all sorts of yummy messiness is that I somehow, you know, I dropped into, and I think you can do this with creativity, I dropped into another world And when I look at these books, they're speaking to me, but they're not speaking our language. They're not speaking the language of, okay, and I have to go pick up my kid at 3:30, or, gosh, I better get that note out. They're speaking something that's almost more like a dream. And it's really important. You know, for me, that feeds me. And I don't know that everybody needs it. But if you need it and you know you need it, then it's almost like you're wanting to create a dialogue that's in whispers or a dialogue that comes to you in a completely different language. And it's vital. Does that make sense?
Oh, it totally makes sense. I love just what you said, a dialogue of whispers.
Yeah.
That you know is the prompt, you know, in some ways of constantly feeding that and staying present to that.
Yeah.
You know, in what you're saying, I just found myself, you know, feeling like if somebody wants a more creative, you know, they'll be attracted to this idea and maybe the title of this lively conversation. And that's really true, because if you're not, if there's something that's got to sort of be knocking at the door in some way for you, you know.
Yeah.
They kind of, you know, beckoning you to wake up a little bit more into that.
And
so I think that's where, if you look at a title of, oh, gee, how to bring, you know, creativity into your life every day, there's something, like you said, in terms of that book that's going to reach out and say, oh, I should listen to that.
Yeah, I'm over here. I'm over here.
Yeah.
It really is opening that kind of listening, and I think that's where creativity, where music, or, you know, part of what I do, you know, I'm a teacher. I teach writing, and I teach writing at my house, and I teach writing online. Very creative stream of consciousness, a la Natalie Goldberg, you know, that real fluid, really writing as fast as you can, just getting everything out. What we're really doing is we're creating a muscle to the creative unconscious. We're really building the muscles of intuition and instinct. And that's also the art classes that I teach with the altered books. We're not just making pretty things, although it's great to do that. We're really honing the muscle of instinct, intuition. And so you might spend 2 hours writing, or you might spend an hour doing the art process, but when you walk outside, you're not just walking outside. Suddenly you hear that bird, and you stop for a minute, and you say, bird, and then you move on, because your awareness is growing. It's the instinct and the intuition. I think that's it.
I love that. I love that whole concept of, I mean, that's sort of the pain of the loss of it, you know, is then you're out of touch with that distinct, you know, part of yourself, or that intuitive part of yourself in any, you know, capacity of your life.
Yeah.
And that doing art, listening to music, gardening, whatever it might be, rearranging the furniture, it could possibly reactivate that very important impulse, or, you know, muscle, or whatever it is that we lose if we don't use.
Right, and why is that? You know, I think that's really, why is it important to work the intuition and the instinct, you know?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Well, for me, I can tell you that having an inner voice that I can clearly distinguish between a head voice, you know, a heart voice and a head voice, the head voice is the shoulds, the you know, everybody recognizes the voice in the head. Some people don't know there's a separation between themselves and the voice of the head. But, you know, it's what's the quality of that voice? The instinctual voice, the intuitive voice, to me, is that, I totally make sense now, the link to the creative voice. I mean, is that, I feel like you just opened up this, like, huge, you know, suddenly the book became very thick and deep for me about this whole topic.
Yeah.
I think, you know?
It's what saves our life, really, and gives our life much more presence and meaning, and more texture and more beauty, because that sort of brain voice is, and we're such a to-do culture, that it's easy just to keep driving ourselves, and making art, listening to music, writing, playing with paper, ripping things up, working the muscles of the intuition and the instinct, I think allows us to be sensitive to a lot more that's going on around us in our lives that we might not have heard because we channeled it out, because we're mostly focused on what we have to do.
Yep.
So that's, I think, that's the answer to that question, is that we become much more sensitive and porous. You know, we hear more and we see more.
Yeah, and again, that aliveness, that vitality, that, you know, truly being in the moment. I mean, of course, that's a huge piece of what we talk about with Simply Celebrate and the ideas and the concepts there. I mean, you know, it's an expression of created moment-to-moment acknowledgement of what's right in front of you. How you can celebrate it, why, you know, you're spending the time to even notice it.
And I think, Tricia, it's a practice. It's not, it's a daily practice. You know, I one of the courses I teach at the website I work at, one of the things I teach at writers.com, and for many years I taught creative nonfiction and people writing stories about their life, and what I noticed was that people wanted to write the story, and maybe they were willing to write a second draft, but sometimes not a third. It was almost too much work for them. And what I saw was, and understandably, they really wanted to reach for that byline. They wanted to finish the story, and they wanted to send it out or just finish the story. And the thing was, the story wasn't ready yet in most cases. The story wasn't ready. And what I noticed and what frustrated me was that they had such a hard time tolerating the process. So I started a course that I teach there called 40 Days and 40 Nights, and it's 40 assignments in 10 weeks. You do an assignment 4 days a week, once a day. And the mantra of the class is, don't ask yourself if you're a writer. Don't ask yourself if your stuff sucks. Ask yourself if you wrote today. And that's, I think, the same thing as, because, you know, like, I've written 5 or 6, 7 books. And the reason why I can't tell you the exact number is because after I wrote those really big, juicy, chunky books, I also, my time got really small, and so I started just writing, books to order. Like, I'd be given an assignment to write a book, and I'd write it pretty fast.
Yeah.
So, but the thing is that even with a documentary film behind me and all these books I've written, every day I still have to come to the creative process. So what I've done doesn't really, it helps me because that just that traction, I've been there. But I still have to be as open and porous today when I sit down as ever.
Yes.
Because, you know, there's a saying that my husband, who's an artist, his name is Mark Wagner, and he said something that I've never forgotten. He said, the most coveted thing in the art world is not talent. It's, and I forget the word, maybe it's endurance. It's practice.
Yeah.
It's tenacity. It's the people who can tolerate the chaos. It's the people who can tolerate being unhappy or march through the critical voice, or the people who don't know what to do but keep going. Those are the people that are ultimately really successful.
Yeah.
Because you can be super creative but not have the capacity to tolerate how uncomfortable it can be to really stick with a creative process.
Yeah.
And that will go nowhere for you.
Wow, and that's, you know, that really speaks to people that might be listening that are artists themselves or have the idea about what it would be to be an artist. You know, you can do that other thing in your life, which is sort of, if I can't be the whole thing, then I'm not going to be creative in my life.
If
I can't live my life as an artist, and, you know, because I'm sure people listening to you are saying, well, you know, on the other end of the spectrum is the person that doesn't, you know, have it, not in touch with that at all in themselves, and saying, well, she's just an artist. She just lives that way, and her husband's an artist, and they just live that way. But I think what you're really saying is each and every day you guys have that choice in front of you as well.
That's right. That's right. And I think that's super important. That's a really important part of this conversation. It's not, we're not just this way because we can't help it. We're this way because it's become important to us, it's a value for us, and we practice it.
Yes.
You know, so, for instance, you know, one of the things, and you're right, my sort of list of what I do will come out in the call. So I'm a life coach, and I work with a lot of people and a lot of creative people. And what we're really trying to do is, you know, I could make a long list of, like, okay, tomorrow you're going to do this and this and follow this recipe, and you can call yourself an artist, or you can make a acting, or you can, but it's really not going to happen unless it really, unless you really want it. And there's something about it that speaks to you, and you don't know what, but you want it, and you can feel it, and you just need a little push to get going.
Yeah. You need that continuous help and reassurance to pursue it.
Yeah. Yes.
And some of that, you know, is accountability in coaching. But if somebody puts themselves into that kind of relationship with you or any type of coach, what they're really saying is, I want this thing, and I'm willing to make myself accountable so I can bring it in.
Right.
And that's what's so valuable about that process. And I think that's why coaching in general has grown so enormously in all of, you know, various disciplines, not just, you know, for creative people or trying to start a creative business or something like that, whatever it is. Because, you know, there's so many distractions.
Accountability with everything. When I look at like any single thing I've ever done, creative or not, it's all the accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can certainly get up and not know where to begin. It's not like I get up and go, God, I can't wait to start writing, or I want to make a new book. I don't get up like that. And that's where I wanted to share a story about Sherry that really was motivating, which is that, you know, Sherry and I were talking about Simply Celebrate a while ago, and she said, you know, the thing is, I created Simply Celebrate. But she didn't say I created it because, she goes, I wake up depressed a good deal of the time. Simply Celebrate is her practice.
Yes.
It's the way she moves from waking up feeling depressed some days to actually being present and connected to what she cares about. You know?
Absolutely.
And so for me, the same thing. It's the accountability. I have 3 writing classes a week that come to my house, and when they get here, we write together. I write with them. That's my practice.
Yes.
You know, so.
So we're in that part of it, which is this, you know, we've been talking about the reasons why and connecting it to so many different parts of life and all of that, but we're really now, so how, if I'm someone who, this is really calling to me in whatever way, how do we do it? And I love the fact that you're starting to just kind of talk about how you build a practice for yourself and what reinforces it for you, because that is such, I don't care what part of life you're talking about. If you want to master it, if you want to have it in your life in any kind of consistent manner, you've got to create a practice around it.
So
talk a little bit more about kind of what you do and maybe working with some of your clients, what you help them do.
Okay. Let's see. Are you talking about coaching?
Or even in your workshops, you've referenced how you've worked with people as a teacher, whatever. But just maybe suggest some, you know, different ways. Like you were saying, you host a writing, 3 different writing groups. I mean, well, anybody could start a writing group if they wanted to. You know what I'm saying? And yet, I don't think people really say, gee, I'm really longing to write. I should start a writing group. I mean, I don't think they, you know, just go there.
Right.
So some of those ideas might be really helpful, too.
Starting a writing group. You know, the image I just keep getting is like, for me, it's always been about taking risks. And so the image I just got was like, when you take a fishing rod, I guess it's fly fishing, and you sort of put it behind you, and then you cast it out. And you cast it out, and that movement of saying, like, I'm going to get a fish. And you throw it out there, and you don't know if you're going to get a fish or a tire, but you're making the stand. And so, like, I have a friend who wants to become a teacher, and she thinks she knows what she wants to teach. You know, not a certified public school teacher, just she wants to teach groups and she wants to lead groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so the thing that we've talked about and what she's going to do is she's going to call up this retreat center that hosts retreats, and she's going to pick a date and she's going to put money down. And now she's got an accountability. She's going to host a retreat next year. These are the dates. And now she has to rise to the occasion, you know. So, like, I remember the first time I ever taught, I was terribly, terribly afraid. I put a notice up at the library, I sent emails out, and I put a date on it. And that was the goal, and I had to rise to the occasion. And I think there's something about rising to the occasion. So it's that calls out the part of you that wants it. Yes. So, you know,
so that's going to come first. I mean, that thing, longing to write, longing to paint.
You identify something.
Yes.
Something out there in the world, and you love it. You collect books on photographs. You love taking photographs. You love to read. People always tell you you could be a writer. You know, you love music. You wanted to take guitar lessons. You know, if any of those small things, they can start as the smallest thing. Just notice what you gravitate towards.
Exactly.
You know, what do you love?
That's that voice of instinct and intuition all tied with creativity trying to get out.
Yeah. You can get out of your house and take a walk. What moves you?
Yeah.
What speaks to you?
Well, and I'm a perfect example of the person who has always said, well, I'm not creative. I'm not a writer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, I don't continuously play music in my life. I mean, I've had a piano from time to time and I enjoy playing, but, you know, and so here's my Sherry story. She started a couple of different groups that I was a part of. Oh my gosh, she and I know each other now 18 years. In the early days, where there would be all these artists and me,
right?
And she kept saying, "But you're such a creative person in how it comes out in this way." And she and the things that I do are, I was mountain climbing at the time. I was hiking at the time. I was interested in, you know, furniture. Just for my own, you know, in antique furniture, and I was really in, you know, and I had all of these kind of creative things that I was doing, and I wouldn't acknowledge them in that manner.
Right. You didn't see them that way.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned so much by just, again, her repeated invitation and saying to me, but you are creative,
that.
And you are you are an artist in a different way with your life.
You know what you're telling me is so great, and reminds me, I wrote a book a few years ago about my aunt, who's a sculptor in Los Angeles, and she's 75 now. And the thing was is that her story was so great because she's been an artist all of her life, but she only started sculpting probably when she was 40 or 50. So she was married to a Navy guy, and she had four children, and she was like, you know, real lockstep, did the whole domestic scene. Moved like 18 times in 20 years because he was in the Navy. But here's the thing, and this is how we told her story, was that she never had the time to actually sit down and make art. So this is what she did. Her art came in the form of every time she got flowers together and put it in a vase, it was the time and the presence she took to make those flowers beautiful, to make that bouquet beautiful. It was every time she set the table for dinner, it was the time she took, it was the choices she made about what was going on that table and how they sat. It was the way she decorated her home full of things that were full of comfort and beauty. And so everything she touched came from those hands that eventually found themselves around stone and started to chisel. But those hands were getting... they were getting trained, and that artist's eye and that instinct and intuition was getting trained in the smallest way every day in these ordinary, beautiful things until she had the time and space to actually start making things.
Oh, I love that story.
And I feel like if there's anything in this phone call that is of value to people, it's that sort of that surrender and humility to the art that is just outside of our fingertips right now, the smallest, tiniest things, what we choose to wear and the care we take in that. You know, do you love to wear beautiful things, color?
Mm-hmm.
A note we might write, and where is the artistry in that? So I want to invite any of the people listening to this who might not know, well, I don't play guitar, or I don't really know how to rip paper and play with color, or I don't really write. I would hate for them to think that those are the only things we value from a point of view of celebrating the artist in you. You know, that's, I think in that, you know, back to why is it important, even as I said it, it's like, thank you for a moment in my life when I can slow down and I can set this table because These are beautiful things, and I'm about to sit down and eat. But thank you for these flowers, and they're so gorgeous, and which one wants to go where? And really slowing down and taking pleasure in that. That's art. That's the creative. That's the creative.
Such a wonderful, wonderful message for people to hear.
Yeah. And I think it's inviting, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, how I'd like to close our conversation today is let people know how they can find you out there, and whether they've been prompted by you hearing or you saying the word workshop, or talking about some of the books that you've written. If they want to find your books, if they'd like to come to a workshop or consider coaching or something, what's the best way to introduce people to you personally?
Okay, great. So if people are interested in doing the creative unconscious writing, the wild writing here in Alameda, I teach it 3 days a week at my house, and the classes are 10 weeks long. They're during the day. They're Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings. The classes are small, and that's wild writing, so that's really intuitional writing. If they want to, if they can't make it or they live far away, you can find me at writers.com. I teach 4 very, very creative nonfiction classes there, and that's a perfect way to connect with me and to grow yourself as a writer and an artist. That's writers.com. And if they're interested in life coaching, if they're wanting to put the wag back in their life and really get recharged and motivated for what they want to do and a life they want to lead that's bigger and more exciting and rock 'em, sock 'em and makes them happy to wake up to, they can email me or call me. My email is Laurie Wagner@sbcglobal.net.
Great.
Or they can call me.
Well, we'll put that up in our blurb that will accompany the audio download, and that certainly lives in our library of archives up on Simply Celebrate. And we're also getting ready to shift into podcasting, and you're going to be our inaugural podcast.
Yay.
So even saying that, I'm not quite sure what that means, but, you know, it's a sign of the times, right?
Good.
So just on behalf of Simply Celebrate and our Lively Conversation series, thank you so much for spending time with us today and talking about this topic. I had such a wonderful time just in the conversation and feel very inspired and motivated by it in and of itself. So thanks again for joining us.
It was really my pleasure. Thank you.
How deep would you love, dear? What would you hear if you listened to your beautiful heart? To your beautiful heart. La-di-da, la-di-da, la-di-da. La-di-da, la-di-da. La-di-da.